What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. Thank you for tuning into the show. On today's episode, I am joined by Nico from BitVault. Nico has a facility in Venezuela, and his tweet about moving operations back down to Venezuela now that the country has opened up a bit to Bitcoin mining really is what sparked this conversation. Nico has some unique perspectives. It was a great conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. If you do, please leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. Now we've got a word from our sponsor, Ledin, and then we are on to the show with Nico. Enjoy. Boost your mind's performance with Ledin, a suite of institutional-grade services that can help you manage and optimize your digital wealth. Ledin works with Genesis, the most established institution in digital assets, to offer its clients access to savings and credit products at industry-leading rates and with unprecedented transparency. Want to boost your mind's revenue? Link your mind's payouts to their Bitcoin savings account, which lets you earn 6.5% APY on your Bitcoin. Their USDC savings account also pays out 10% APY, and these rates will be held until December 31st, 2020. Need to invest in more equipment but don't want to give up the upside on your Bitcoin? You can get a Bitcoin-backed loan from Ledin to access the liquidity you need without having to sell your Bitcoins. Want to amplify the returns of your Bitcoin? Ledin's B2X loan service lets you double the amount of Bitcoin you own through a Bitcoin-backed loan. There's no surprise that many miners use their services, including Hashrate, as the founders were miners themselves when they built this platform. If you want to learn more about Ledin today and how they can help you, head to ledin.io. That's ledin.io. Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski, and I have got a very special guest today. I'm a little bit upset that I just realized that this man and I lived in the same city for God knows how long without ever connecting in person, but I'll have to remedy that sometime soon. He recently put out a tweet about reestablishing his mining operation in Venezuela. So I reached out, wanted to have him on the show. He's also the host of a really awesome podcast and YouTube channel, Simply Bitcoin. Make sure you check that out. Everybody, welcome to the show, Nico. Nico, how you doing, man?
What's up, man? Hi, bro. I'm so happy that you invited me to come on, man. I've heard about your podcast. I think it's a great show, and you know, I'm honored to be invited.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate you. Hey, that video that you shot, was it yesterday? Yesterday was Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Out on the boat in the bay, looking good. So you got into Bitcoin, what, 2016, did you say?
Yeah. So originally, and this happens to everybody, this literally, I hear this story so many times being a podcaster. I originally used Bitcoin in 2013 to purchase some goods online.
Nice.
But I never saved it. You know, I never kept it. I never considered it as you know, I wasn't indoctrinated with self-sovereignty and all that jazz.
We were focused on the goods, right? You buy the goods, maybe then you forget what you're doing, you know.
Exactly. And I lost some of those private keys to that Bitcoin. So I probably have, you know, like 0.3, 0.5 Bitcoin just laying around that I lost access to. But I really got into Bitcoin in early 2016. And I got in because, like, I was going through a very rough patch in my life. I was working a minimum wage job. My parents divorced. We lost everything. Huge. It was a total disaster. And I dropped out of college. And man, I was living on my friend's couch. Okay, like it was really rough. Okay, I barely had any money. And my cousin came over from Venezuela, and he came to my buddy's apartment. And you know, my buddy wasn't there, so I let him up. And we were just chilling on the balcony, and I'm like, hey, what are you up to? You know, he's kind of my age. And he's like, I'm mining. I'm like, what is that? And he's like, well, it's like these machines, and they make magic internet money. And I'm like, you're lying to me. That's BS. And he's like, no, have you heard of Bitcoin? I'm like, of course I've heard of Bitcoin. He's like, the machines mine Bitcoin. I'm like, no way. How do I get into this? What is this? Tell me everything. And he gave me the lowdown, and man, I took a huge, I borrowed money from my ex-girlfriend. I borrowed money from my mom. I borrowed money. I literally maxed out my credit card, like 30K, had no intention of ever paying it back. Just took out all that cash. And I literally got on a plane, flew to Venezuela, and I came to my uncle, which is, he's the one that has the big mining operations over there. And I told him, I was like, dude, teach me. And he's like, listen, I'm not going to pay you a dollar, but I will show you. So I used half the money that I had saved up to buy Bitcoin outright, and I used the rest to buy the beautiful S9s, baby. And for people that are not familiar with the Antminer S9, which is one of the most popular miners at one point back in 2017. And man, I got lucky as hell because it was the beginning of the bull market. And you know, my value in Bitcoin and the miners, because the cost of electricity in Venezuela is essentially free, and I'll explain to you why that is in a little bit. Man, it just, I went from zero to, you know, having a business in a span of probably like a year and a half, 2 years. Then the situation started getting very rocky. The government started literally seizing the machines at customs. Mm-hmm. And the officials were crazy because it's not like they were just taking it and whatever. No, they're taking it and they were mining it themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a crazy time, man. So I had to get the hell out of there. And I moved my operation. I got very lucky. I moved my operation to South Carolina. I found this older gentleman that owned this old pantyhose factory that had all the electrical infrastructure already there, hot air extractors, the capacitors. It has 10 megawatts of electrical capacity already there. It was essentially the perfect place to mine.
Yeah.
Right. And he was using it to store his cars because he was a car collector. And I'm like, hey man, have you heard about Bitcoin mining? Yeah, no idea. I'm like, listen, they're machines that basically make money. He's like, that's impossible. I'm like, look, I promise you. So I teamed up with him, and yeah, that's been my operation ever since. So right now we're currently hosting around 2,500 miners.
So you and the same gentleman, the car collector, still are in business together mining Bitcoin?
Yes, it's his location. And I basically facilitate the clients, right? So I bring in the clients, I deal with the clients. I don't really deal with the clients anymore. I have my employee that does that for me, but I'm the brand, I guess.
Sure.
I guess that's the best way to put it.
So you guys still have, it's 10 megawatts in South Carolina still, you guys have?
In South Carolina, we have 10 megawatts in that facility, and we have another facility that has around 15 megawatts.
Awesome. Also in South Carolina?
Also in South Carolina, in the same place.
So how, I mean, comparable to everywhere else in the United States, I'm sure power must be pretty advantageous there. What are rates looking like in South Carolina right now?
So I can't tell you the exact price we're getting because that's the secret sauce.
Sure,
you know that. But
I had to try.
This older gentleman, his name is Lilo. He gets, he basically owns like 80% of the commercial property in this town. Okay, so he has a lot of leverage, and I shouldn't be saying this, but we're getting below 5 cents per kilowatt hour.
Okay, and I mean, I assume you're offering hosting prices. So what are your all-in hosted prices there?
So our hosting prices obviously vary by machine, but so our clients would usually pay between 7 to 10 cents, depending on the quantity of miners they want to host with us.
Now, have you guys started to explore the revenue sharing models with any of your clients? I know that's something that's becoming a little bit more popular, almost like a cost and carry that a fund would provide if someone was investing.
So I spoke to JP Barrett from the Mining Store.
Yep.
And he offered that. But my partner Lilo did not want to go for it at all.
Sure.
He's an older gentleman, man. This guy doesn't need to make money. Okay. He's wealthy. So he's like, listen, no, let's just stick to this. This works. You know, you get your cut, you know, and then he gets 50%. Right. So that's how it's going right now.
Yeah. I guess it takes a little bit of it de-risks the process is the best way to say that. Right. If you're just doing a straight PPA with the people who are hosting, it does make a lot more sense. So mining in the United States now, heading back south to Venezuela.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
So before you ask that question, let me kind of explain to you what the situation is on like in the ground and why it's so advantageous to mine it in a place like Venezuela. So so basically in Venezuela there's two rates. Okay, there's the official exchange rate and then there's the black market rate, right? The your electricity bill is in the official rate, right? The official rate is comparable to most industrial electricity prices around the world. It's actually, you know, on the little bit on the more expensive side. The catch is though, is that no one goes by the official rate. People go by the black market rate, and the black market rate is significant. Like I'm talking about 100,000% less. So you're paying like it's literally free, yeah. Right? So that's basically how it works over there. That's why it's so advantageous. The problem is the security situation, right? And you know, in 2017, 2018, when the government started wising up and seizing machines, they straight up made it illegal. Man, if they caught you with machines, you'd go to jail. That's why right. I left. I was like, hell no, I'm not staying there.
You want to go to Venezuelan jail? Come on, man.
But recently, the government announced, and I talked about this on an episode of Simply Bitcoin, they recently announced the legalization of mining again. You're supposed to be using a government mining pool, but that's impossible to enforce. But the good news is that if I get caught with miners, someone gets caught with miners, the worst thing that they could happen is they'll take them, but you won't go to jail, right? They're not going to put you in prison. Mm-hmm. So I hit up my uncle and I said, listen, like, what's the deal with this? What are you thinking? He's like, this is great news. And I'm like, do you have capacity over? Do you have space? He's like, absolutely. You know, whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
You know, call me. So yeah, man, that's why I made that announcement.
Okay. So a couple of things to dig in there. Black market rates versus the industrial rates. All right. So how are these rates able to be set? I'm assuming, I mean, aren't all power sources government controlled?
So I'm sure you know this, but you know, mining, it basically comes from isolated energy producing sectors, right?
Yes.
They generally tend to be away from the cities, mm-hmm. right? So what tends to happen is that a lot of the power generation in Venezuela, you're right, it is government controlled, but that's near the cities. And away from the cities, there's power generation, I don't know what the correct terminology is, but like basically turbines, I guess that would be the right word, that were completely out of commission, right? They were broken, right? Mm-hmm. And what miners started to do was, because these guys weren't getting paid, because the no one was paying. Imagine you can't operate as an electricity manufacturer if you're literally getting paid pennies for the power you're producing. You're going to go right out of business, right? Yep. So what the miners did is that they approached them and they said, guys, we'll pay you. Right. So what happened was crazy, that these turbines that were only producing like, you know, 25% of their capacity.
Yeah.
Went to 85% capacity because of the Bitcoin miners. The Bitcoin miners actually helped electricity production in Venezuela. It's absolutely insane. It's crazy. And the government ignored that. Why did they ignore that? Because it helped the people, and they're a socialist country.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So sure. It's crazy, man. It's absolutely absurd.
Okay. So the hype around Bitcoin in Venezuela, the government's, let's say, kind eye that they're turning towards Bitcoin now, the desire for them to put a public or a socialized mining pool in place. What's the end game here for them? All right. Is this like the government just wants to accumulate the virgin Bitcoin to skirt sanctions? Is that the thought here?
So they're in a difficult spot, right? Mm-hmm. So they tried Petro, right?
Yeah.
The Petro dollar.
Yes.
Right. That was immediately banned by the United States, which resulted in the immediate ban of the Petro on all exchanges around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they figured they couldn't do that, right? So what they're thinking is with making a national Bitcoin mining pool, is that they're not going to be paying out what you'd normally pay out to, you know, what your normal payouts would be if you used AMPOOL or F2 pool, right? They're going to be taking a much bigger cut of that.
Nice chunk.
And their thinking is like the population is going to help fund our, you know, our basically failing society, right? They're literally on their last limbs right now. They just lost control of CITGO in the United States, right? Which is their main source of revenue for PDVSA, which is the national nationalized oil company. And man, they're in such a tough spot that they're doing this out of desperation. But what made me super bullish is that they naturally gravitated to the hardest money there is, which was Bitcoin. Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
So it's crazy what they're doing. And you know what? The US government can't do jack shit about it. You know, they could ban the petro, but they can't ban Bitcoin. So it's definitely a way to skirt around sanctions for sure.
You know, we've seen this obviously with Iran recently too, right? Iran giving the green light to Bitcoin miners and then going one step further and basically saying that any of the, I think there are three nuclear plants in Iran that were able to use their excess power to mine Bitcoin. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, I'm not comparing the two countries directly, but the use, it seems, of the Bitcoin mining capacity that they're allowing tends to serve the same function. Now, with regard to the pool not being enforceable, okay, so I would assume that everyone that's down there mining is going to do their own thing still, right? If it's not enforceable, you're just like you if you were mining anywhere else, you're going to go to the pool that's going to provide you with the best service at the lowest rates. So at some point, the jig's got to be up, right? They'll have to see. So
okay, so remember how I told you that the government officials seize the machines?
Yes.
Right? Those machines will be using the national pool.
Sure.
Right? The government, because they legalized it, they're kind of being nefarious here, are basically telling the population, Bitcoin's legal, everybody, you know? And it's giving them an excuse to seize machines just because they think that – do you get what I'm trying to tell you?
Yeah.
Just because they think they're not using the national pool.
So
right.
they're incentivizing people to go out and source the hardware and get it hooked up and start mining, and then they're using the pool as a way to then legitimize the seizure later on.
Exactly.
So
it's very delicate. You have to. I'm Venezuelan, obviously, mm-hmm. but you know I lived most of my life in Miami, so I don't know how to carry myself over there. That's why I use my uncle. And he's been mining Bitcoin since 2014 in Venezuela, you know?
Yeah.
So he's my dude on the ground there, and I have full confidence in him.
Sure. Yeah. It's such a cool situation, right? Like take the government out of it. Well, maybe then everything would be better, but because of the current economic crisis that's going on down there and now the institution and implementation of Bitcoin at scale. I mean, the Venezuelan community has always been, you know, one of the most keen on Bitcoin, right? Because it does provide that hard money alternative to the infinitely inflating currency that's going on down there, right? Do you see this having a net positive impact on Venezuelan society? Is this going to potentially boost the economy, or is it just, are we just kind of waiting on the government down there to fail?
That's a great question. So I'll answer it in two parts. When I explain Bitcoin to a Westerner, mm-hmm. right, they have a hard time understanding. When I explain Bitcoin to a Latin American, like an Argentinian,
yeah.
a Venezuelan, a Brazilian, someone from Turkey, someone that's from a country that doesn't benefit from a stable inflation rate.
Right.
They understand it in a heartbeat, in a heartbeat. And Venezuelans are not using Bitcoin because they have a choice. They're
right.
using Bitcoin out of necessity.
Yes.
And if you look at local Bitcoin data, right? Venezuela, even though it has a very small population compared to the rest of South America, has the largest transaction volume in the entire continent of South America. So, yes, man, they're using it to save. They're using it to transact. It's a lifeboat for them. And I had a Venezuelan on the podcast the other day, and I asked him, then listen, it's mostly the younger generation. He says no. He says my mom, my 60-year-old mom, is being forced to learn to use this, and she understands it. She gets it. And I heard that. I'm like, dude, that's impossible, because my mom, like, she barely understands it. She's like, right. Look, I have money in the bank. It's money. It's my money. Whatever. This and this and that. And imagine a 60-year-old lady, like, using Bitcoin and understanding it, not because it's a fad or not because it's like self-sovereignty and all, you know, all the good buzzwords. They're using it out of necessity, man. Yeah. Survival.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, you know, for your mom and my mom. They go to the store today, they buy milk, it's a dollar. They go in a month, it's $1.05, right? So inflation is almost, it's a lifetime of death by small cuts. But in Venezuela, you've got a dollar today, $20 tomorrow, right? So you're noticing that drastic hit. I could see that, man. I could see that. And there's, yeah, well, we'll see. I'd like to see this kind of create some positive change down there, aside from just the direct impact on the population. It'd be nice to see this, you know, kind of work its way up, instead of, you know, just being something that is used by those that are absolutely in necessity to use it in the population. If there's a way that this could potentially lead to some kind of government shift, that would be something else, man. That'd be a hell of a use case.
So it's definitely a case study, right? Because what's happening is that the country has literally become dollarized at this point. Okay. Yeah. So the Bolivar is not being used. It's literally become a dollarized, you know, society. And a lot of people are choosing not to use the dollar. A lot of people are choosing to use Bitcoin. So that's awesome. That's a really good sign. Their trust in fiat is just because they know they suffered. They know the consequences of it. So they know the implications, right? And they know that the dollar is the same. The only reason is that the dollar has a global reserve currency status, right? That's the only reason that the dollar didn't inflate like crazy when we just printed $3 trillion out of thin air.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be a very interesting case study, you know, and just see how this history plays out, man. I'm so happy to be alive during this time.
All right. Yeah. Your energy right now is infectious, dude. Let's like the video the other day, us talking now, you are so bullish that it's getting me hype on Bitcoin. And I mean, it's my life as well. So what is it that gets you so excited about Bitcoin on a regular basis?
Dude, it Bitcoin, and I just recently wrote an article for Citadel 21, and I'll give you a sneak peek. Bitcoin gave me purpose, man. And you could have all the money in the world, right? But if you don't have a reason to wake up in the morning, is life worth living? And in 2016, when I was living on my friend's couch and when my parents lost everything, literally, and, you know, because of the 2009 financial crisis, ironically, when Bitcoin was created, and, you know, the paradigm shift of my life, you know, it went from living very well, I grew up very well off, to losing absolutely everything. You know, to my old friends ostracizing me, to like losing everything, man. I had no purpose. The only thing that I knew how to do was, you know, I grew up in Miami, bro. You know how it is. I knew how to party and do drugs, right? That was my life. And now I couldn't do that anymore because I was broke. You know, I needed a job, and I dropped out of college, so I couldn't get a high paying job. It depressed me. It was out of desperation, man. And I don't know how this thing just fell out of nowhere. And I was talking to John Vallis on a podcast recently. And man, what Bitcoin does is it gives you hope. It gives you hope for a better future. It gives you hope for this generational thing, man, that I've talked to other Bitcoiners and they say the same thing. Because before, with fiat, it's hopeless. First of all, you're losing money. If you don't want to lose money, you have to play the Wall Street game, okay? Like you have to become basically a trader, but you're not a trader by profession. So then you have to hire a financial advisor who's killing you with fees. And it's a completely just – it's too big of an industry for what it does.
Right.
Right? And it's crazy. All that to maintain your wealth. It's a total scam. The money is clearly broken.
Sure.
And when I realized this, right, obviously I'm not going to lie to you and anyone that tells you otherwise. Like, I got into Bitcoin because of the money, right? But it Trojan horsed the hell out of me into understanding and learning that, man, this thing that Satoshi created is a game changer. It changes everything. It changes everything. It just flips everything on its head. And I don't think people are starting to notice with that MicroStrategy buy recently.
Yeah.
But man, it just gave me purpose, man. It gave me purpose. It gave me a reason to live. And that's why I've dedicated literally my entire life and breath to giving back to the Bitcoin community in my hash rate and in my podcast.
Okay. So let's talk about Bitcoin maximalism, right? How do you view that word? If somebody calls you a maxi, good, bad, or indifferent?
I love it. And I love it when someone calls me toxic, and I could tell you why. It saves you money. So if people could, like, listen to maximalists, listen to the toxic plebs, man, we're saving you money. We're just, we're being very brute about it. We're not beating around the bush, but if you listen to us toxic plebs, man, you're going to save yourself a lot of money and a lot of heartache, because those shit coins, man, they'll wreck you real quick.
Yeah, I think it's just it's all based on your time horizon. You know, when you get into Bitcoin, you get into it for money. A lot of people get into the shit coins for money as well. And it just comes down to fast money versus a long-term commitment, I'd say. I wouldn't consider myself a maxi, although I'm a believer, right? How do you view that from a mining sense? So, like, there's a lot of miners who will use pools that profit switch. You know, and you're mining SHA-256, but it's profit switching between the mineable SHA coins. So, is that something that is against your beliefs, or how do you guys operate?
No, not at all. So I am a Bitcoin maximalist in terms of that's everything that I hold in my portfolio, mm-hmm. but mining's a business, man. So we mine Saya coin and we mine Zcash as well.
Nice.
But very small percentage, about 30% of our mining operation.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I just know that there's a lot of, I mean, most of the pools nowadays have a profit switching component that'll switch between Bcash and BSV and Bitcoin just to mine whatever's most profitable at a certain time.
I understand that, but out of pure principle, we do not mine BSV and we do not mine Bitcoin Cash.
That's what I was getting at.
Even if it's more profitable, just out of principle, we do not mine BSV or Bitcoin Cash ever. And I've had clients suggest that to me, and I told them straight up, no, find somewhere else.
Yeah.
But we do mine shit coins because, bro, they're profitable, man. But yeah. I immediately sell it to Bitcoin at the end of the week. Every single week, I immediately sell it to Bitcoin. And the client, and then, you know, whatever my clients decide to do with their coins, you know, that's their problem.
Their
right?
business. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a quandary that I have, because I mean, obviously, if you spend a lot of money on mining infrastructure, it's a business. You gotta be able to turn a profit. You need to be able Absolutely. To show results to your clients, and that makes total sense. To me, it's a little bit odd, and I can understand the justification that a lot of the mining pools are now adding these profit switchers, because it puts the Bitcoin believer in a weird position, right? If you are a Bitcoin supporter and you're mining, I wonder how many people are mining BSV and BCH and don't necessarily even know that that's where some of the profit that they're making is coming from.
Man, it all depends on the pool you're using, man. It really does. You know, you like I trust the mining pool that I use. I've used them my entire career, my short career. So I know that I'm only mining Bitcoin because that's the only revenue I'm getting into my wallet, right?
For sure. How do you feel about the pool game now? I mean, if you've just been loyal to one pool, maybe you haven't been affected by it as much as others, but it seems to me now that there's such a heightened level of competition and there's so many new players that are coming in. It's just kind of this becoming this race to the bottom.
Yeah, so, that's actually a really great question. And I've had Thomas Veller from F2, when he used to work at F2 Pool. I've had him on the podcast. I've had Ethan Vera from Luxor Pool. And man, the hash rate wars and all that stuff that they're doing, they're sending fake blocks to just waste their hash rate. And you know, it's absolutely they're crazy. Savage. They're savage. It's a war. But you know who wins? We, miners. The consumers win.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. I personally I've always been using it because I have a very good relationship with Bitmain. So I've only used the Ant Pool my entire career. And that's just because they give me really good prices on their miners. So
how do you feel now that seeing all the stuff, air quotes, that's going on with Bitmain, how does that sit with you? You think it's going to play out soon?
Man, I think Jihan effed up, man. Jihan messed up. He messed up the end. And I'll tell you exactly when he messed up, when he decided to back Bitcoin Cash.
ETH.
When he decided to back Bitcoin Cash, it killed him because he drained a lot of his capital. And you know how it is, man, in legal battles, the one who wins is the one with the bigger war chest. So he messed up. He took a bad bet. But personally, because they give me great deals, and because they've been very good to me, I have someone that I talk to over there on the phone when I make purchases. I don't just purchase online, and they've treated me extremely well. So I'm loyal to them in the sense that, you know, bro, they make great miners. You know what else could I say?
So you mentioned some of the bottlenecks previously with bringing in hardware to Venezuela. How is that now? Like shipping from China to Venezuela to get a new hardware.
So I handle all the shipping. Well, I don't handle, I have someone do it for me, but I deal with all the shipping in terms of it coming to South Carolina. I have all that set up. You know, I taught my guy over there how to handle that. But when it comes to Venezuela, like I said before, you need to know someone that understands the situation on the ground, and that's mm-hmm. my uncle. So he deals with receiving miners from China.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm curious at how long it takes to clear customs there. Oh, obviously, no.
like that. A second, man. Yeah, everything's
a nice corrupt, handshake.
A nice handshake. A very, very nice handshake. You know, everything's corrupt, man. It's who you know. We have a term, it's called enchufado, which means plugged in, right? Plug. And that's how it works. It's the Wild West, man. It's absolutely crazy. You know, I'm going to have to go there just to see the facility myself before I start accepting people's miners. But, you know, that's the last time I'm going to go, man. The rest, I'm going to set up a camera so I could see it. But, you know, the rest is I'm going to rely on my uncle for that. And man, my uncle has he has like 10,000 ASICs, man. So, you know, this chump change for him, right. You know, so I'm a small fish, man. I have 2,500 ASICs, bro. So, you know, I'm a small to medium sized miner. You can call me that.
2,500 ASICs. It's a good size, man. You're doing well for yourself. You know,
it's decent. I wish the thing is like, I only own 325. You know, the rest are my clients.
Still, I mean, I'm sure that there's continual scaling going on. How did you find, so right now, and answer this if you want to, how did you find everything with the S17s as they came out? Did you get a batch of those? Did you find the failure rates to be
disaster? Okay, disaster. And I'm still kind of pissed because I've been trying to get my hands on S19s and it's been absolutely impossible. right? But we're mostly running. We're still running some S9s. But yeah, the majority of the miners that we have are S17s. You know, they rectified the situation. I'll leave it at that.
Should. I was hearing 30% failure rates for some people.
They fixed the issue for me. I'll just say that.
That's a very good connection that you've got there, if that's the case.
I got angry, man, because you have to understand, that like, so I'm a small player, right?
Yeah.
But my uncle's a huge player. So he's the one that has that connection. So when they talk to me, they think they're talking to my uncle. They think they're talking to an employee of my uncle. Right. So that's where we get the pull. Yeah. What else was I going to say? But the S19 that I've been trying to get my hand on for so long, and it's so elusive, it frustrates me. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it used to never be like that. You know, it used to never, like, the S9, that thing was so easy to get. You know, it'd literally be delivered to you, like, straight from Shenzhen at your door, you know, in a week, 2 weeks max.
So you haven't dabbled with the Watts miners at all? You haven't tried?
No.
Okay. All right.
Man, I hate to say this, man, but that relationship with Bitmain, man, mm-hmm. is very important to me, because they just give me great deals.
I kind of
stick with them. In terms of the you know, the shit coins that we do mine, they're in a silicon, and mm-hmm. The Saya minor obelisks disaster. But I got, bro. Okay. Let me tell you. Okay. I'll tell you the story. So Zach's a buddy of mine. The designer, now he's designing a hardware
foundation. Yeah.
So Zach
looks pretty sick.
Zach's a buddy of mine, man. But he got effed, because he got literally, like, Bitmain just came out of nowhere and just screwed him. And I feel so bad, because he tried to start manufacturing them in China. I'm tapping mm-hmm. on the table again. Sorry.
You're good.
He started trying to manufacture them in China. Big mistake, right? Big mistake. Because the Chinese are infamous for, like, they'll see what they're doing, they're going to copy you, and they're going to do it cheaper, and, you know, whatever.
Yep.
So he was forced to manufacture in the United States. Problem is that the United States doesn't have the capacity of ASIC manufacturing compared to China, right? So he kind of got screwed on that. But I didn't buy any miners on the pre-sale. I didn't do any of that. What I did was, as soon as they announced the fork on Discord, I went on eBay and I bought every single SC1 that was like people were messaging me saying, like, I hate your guts. Because it just became, like, one of the most profitable miners overnight as soon as they did that fork, right? Yep. So I bought 50, and I was buying them cheap. They were so cheap. It was crazy. The next day, I think they were selling for three. My memory is not serving me well here, but I think they were originally selling for like 300 or 300 or 250, whatever, on eBay. The next day they were selling for $3,000, but wow. I bought them all, bro. I was like, okay, this is an opportunity. This is the craziest part. I made back 100% of my investment in a month, and I quadrupled my investment in a period of like six, seven months. It was absurd.
In that case, it would be really difficult not to just resell them at a 10X, you know? Buy and flip. I think that's what a lot of people are trying to do right now with S9s. I mean, like, you guys are running them and you've got cheap power, you know, so it makes sense. Keep your S9s plugged in until they stop working if you're, you know, mining on free power. There's places in the States that are doing that as well. But I mean, there's so many people who bought those S9s at ridiculous rates, right? Peak of the market, 2017, like $3,000?
Yeah, it was amazing, dude. It was so amazing. But what was awesome, though, is that even if you did buy it at the peak time, like December 2017, you literally made your money back in a month.
Yeah.
Right? It was crazy. But Yeah, man, people got wrecked. People got so wrecked.
Well, so now they're what, $20? You can buy them in bulk for $20-$25. And I mean, I heard of somebody that was buying them in South America for $100. I mean, you could find a buyer for a $100 S9. There's a lot of people that would offload at those prices. That's crazy. $100 for an S9 nowadays.
I'm going to tell you something. My uncle's still running S7s, man.
Even with difficulty adjusting the way that it is, I mean, are they pulling anything?
Barely, but it doesn't matter, man. Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, true.
Dude, he told me, he's like, I'm going to run this for 50 years. Because I'm like, it's free, bro. It's literally free money. Makes, you know, like, even if it's like a cent, 5 cents, probably less, like 2 cents, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
It's free.
It's free. Yeah. So, like, why unplug it? You know
true.
What I'm saying?
True.
So, it's crazy. When he told me that, I was like, that's absolutely insane.
God, I mean, if only we could get some regulatory clarity out of Venezuela in a way that made people more comfortable, more people could go down there and exploit some of this.
You won't get that. And this free power situation is going to end as soon as, you know, the government fails, which I don't think it's going to, because it has Cuba like heavily intertwined there, mm-hmm. and Cuba's yeah. maintained control over their, you know, over their communist country for many years, yeah. and it also has the backing of China and Russia. So
I mean, you guys have so much. I mean, as far as resources go, it's the most resource-rich country, one of the most resource-rich countries in the world. Venezuela is. So as long as you guys have that supply of oil, even though you may have lost Citgo, there's always going to be buyers for that supply.
It's crazy though, because we have all this oil. First of all, it's there's different variations of oil, right? There's yeah. there's Texas sweet oil, which is and the Saudi oil, which is very, very, it's like, the reason they call it sweet is because it doesn't need a lot of refinement.
Correct.
Venezuelan yeah. oil is very heavy, so it needs a ton of refinement for it to actually be useful, right? When PDVSA nationalized, that was in the 60s or the 70s, but when Chavez fired all the oil executives to give people back, to give the company back to the people, it was a brain drain. So Venezuela lost its capacity to refine oil themselves, to the point that listen, man, oil used to be cheaper than water over there. They were literally, it was cheaper than water. But because of such mishandling from the government, they can't even produce their own oil anymore, even though oil is literally like coming out of the ground in Lake Maracaibo, right? So they had to work with Iran, and I think, I'm sure you heard of this, and actually import oil to one of the richest oil, I mean, largest oil reserve countries in the world. They had to import oil from Iran in giant cargo ships. I think the U.S. seized like one or two, but it's absolutely insane, and it's all the result of socialism, right? Because, dude, listen. Like, forget about political ideologies and all that, right? That's another topic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a genius to understand that the oil executives, right, that have been there for 20 years are there for a reason, because they know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
If you put people that don't have the qualifications just because of your political ideology, what do you think was going to happen, man? It was a disaster. It's like taking a McDonald's employee and telling him to design a rocket for Tesla. He's not going to know what to do. You know what I'm saying? He knows how to make fries and burgers. And these guys, the only reason that they were put in was because they were loyal to the party.
Sure.
You know, it's just crazy. I can go on for hours talking about this.
Well, I mean, it is a fascinating topic. You know, we're witnessing the prime use case for Bitcoin right in front of our eyes, right? And you know, all of us who are excited about it, if you're in the United States, you're kind of getting a glimpse of what things could look like if we don't start to make different decisions, you know, on a governmental level. We're, you know, it may sound kind of scary to think that we're, you know, a couple decades removed from the potential of having the same kinds of situations in Venezuela here in the United States, right? Not to get political with it. But it's why we Bitcoin, man. It's why it's there. So
it's why we Bitcoin. And what's awesome about Bitcoin is that if, because there's a, and it scares the living crap out of me, because America literally is the last free country on earth, if you ask me. And I'm forever grateful that I was able to immigrate here. There's this socialist movement that's becoming more rampant. And I kind of blame that on academia and misinformation and propaganda. Mm-hmm. But the awesome part about Bitcoin, man, is that we could just leave. It's not like you can't just leave with a bank account. You can't just leave with your gold. That gold's very heavy, you know. Mm-hmm. A bank, they could just close that, you know. Yep. Hey, don't go, you know, respect your country. No. With Bitcoin, you take your gold card, you take, or write those 24 words, man. Write them in a book, or just circle 24 words that match your 24 word seed phrase in a book. And just leave, and you can take all of your wealth with you immediately, right? So that in itself fundamentally changes everything. Because, dude, I had this surreal experience. I went to London, like I think it was like 2017, 2018, with a buddy of mine for his birthday, and he rented this house. And I remember, like, the customs officials, like, are you carrying, you know, $10,000 in cash with you? And dude, I was carrying much more than $10,000, not in cash, but in the value of, you know, in Bitcoin on my gold card in my laptop case, you know. And how are they going to enforce that? How? They can't do that. It's impossible, you know. So it completely changes the government's ability to control people using the money. And yeah, that's what happened in Venezuela. The Venezuelan people are being held hostage by the government because of the money. And what Bitcoin does is that it separates the government from the money, therefore decreasing the government's ability to control people.
Dude, I think that's a great place to end things. This is a great talk, Nico. I'm glad that we were able to get you to come on the show, man. Do me a favor, let everyone know where they can find you. How can they get to Simply Bitcoin? Let's give everyone a quick shill.
Absolutely. Guys, if you guys want a place to host miners, go check out bitvault.com. It also has my podcast on the website as well. And of course, guys, check out my channel. It's called Simply Bitcoin. It's a 10-minute daily recap show. It summarizes everything that happened with Bitcoin in that day, only in 10 minutes. And it's pretty awesome. Go check it out. Again, it's called Simply Bitcoin. And you could follow me on Twitter at bitvault7, aka Nico. Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Nico. And to all of the listeners of the Hashrate Podcast, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Talk to you all again very soon. Thanks for tuning into the Hashrate Podcast. We appreciate your continued support. Please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And head over to Twitter and give us a follow at Hashrate. That's at H4SHR8.